Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, January 6, 2015. More reports of cattle rustling and an ambush by authorities.
We're calling for the MPs from National Parliament who are from Bor, from Awariel, from Lake, to come here to address it. We are also connecting with the central government at a higher level so that we find out exactly who are here.
And China makes a move to convene peace talks on South Sudan between the warring parties.
China is everywhere. They are investing everywhere in Africa. So they have influence over Juba, and they can persuade Juba to think peace so that we can develop this beautiful country called South Sudan.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Suspected cattle rustlers ambushed a vehicle at Rasulu village in western Equatorial State early this morning. The passengers of the minibus were heading to Yei in central Equatorial State. A lawmaker from Mundri County says the driver of the bus was stopped at gunpoint by people believed to be pastoralists from Lake State. Joseph Ngere says South Sudan Army soldiers stationed at Rasulu intervened and killed one of the attackers. He says he has no information on casualty figures among the passengers.
This morning, there were some group of people who fired on the soldiers who were based in Rasulu. They went and found out that one of these cattle owners, one of them was shot dead, and the rest ran away. Because 1 or 2 days ago, they were harassing vehicles on road, putting roadblocks on the road. The army went to see this morning, and this is what happened.
We understand that there was a vehicle traveling from Maridi with passengers, and this vehicle was ambushed. Do you have any details of casualties among the people who were on this vehicle?
This group of people laid a roadblock. They wanted to extort some money from people and passengers. So when this vehicle went and they reported to the army came to check what was happening. That was where they fired on the army, and when the army returned fire, one of them was killed.
I remember we spoke with you last week about how the communities in Western Equatoria are complaining about the presence of cattle keepers who are armed. Now, you told me the authorities there are trying their best to address the situation, but it looks like this is developing into another scenario where they are blocking the roads. What are you doing to address the security situation in the area?
One of the interventions is from this security organs, and that's why one of them was fired at and killed. This is one of the interventions. The other intervention is to have a meeting here, particularly in Mundri West County, where the problem is, and most of the people from Lake and the Central Equatoria will come, Meridi will come, and they will try to address this. But as far as the physical security and the patrol is concerned, the army is alert, the police is alert, and whoever is disturbing, definitely they will get what they wanted.
How do you react to some sentiments from the community who are saying that these cattle actually don't belong to the people who are there? They belong to individuals in Juba who are in a powerful position. Hence, the government is taking its time to address the issues.
We are calling for politicians and whoever we suspect with having the community here with the cattle camps here. We are addressing it, and we're calling for the MPs from National Parliament who are from Bor, from Awariel, from Lake, to come here so that we address it. We are also connecting with the central government at a higher level so that we find out exactly who are here, because definitely they will be discovered, and we put there, we pinpoint, and we address.
That's Joseph Ngere, a lawmaker representing Mundri County at the National Assembly in Juba. He was speaking to me from Mundri County in Western Equatoria earlier today. The minority leader in South Sudan's parliament, Onyoti Odigo Nyikwak, has opposed the government's plan to conduct general elections in June of this year. Odigo says any attempt to hold elections before peace is restored to the country could worsen the ongoing conflict and divide the country even further. Charlton Doki has this report for VOA from Juba.
Odigo told reporters in Juba today that even if the government pushes ahead with the planned elections, his SPLM-DC party will not participate.
We will not accept election at this time. What election? When your people are dying. When people talk about election now, it means that you are inviting more fighting. Election should be when there is peace and tranquility. Election is after we build trust among ourselves. Election is when we forgive one another. Election is when we make accountability to those people who have made atrocity so that we are able to work together.
Last week, the chair of South Sudan's National Elections Commission, Professor Abednego Akok Kachwal, announced his organization would hold presidential, gubernatorial, and parliamentary elections on June 30th. Adigo says it was the wrong decision since the commission does not even have structures at the state and county level to carry out elections. He says the decision shows the commission is biased in favor of the government.
It shows that now they are not neutral. If they talk about election, they should have been the people to advise the government that the government, there is no election because of A, B, C, D.
Information Minister Michael Makuei-Lueth said recently, South Sudan's elections must be held this year according to the country's transitional constitution. The constitution does not state that elections must be held by a certain date, but does state that President Salva Kiir's term will end by July 9th of this year. The constitution also says if no election has been held by then, the presidency will be considered vacant and the vice president will assume the top executive post until a vote is organized. Adigo says there should be a national dialogue, including all leaders, to decide how the country should be led after the current government's term expires.
There is a need for people to sit down, for all political parties, civil societies, religious leaders, to come and sit down to agree. So people have to agree exactly that either we extend this parliament, we extend the executive, the president, the governors, whatever they agree can be brought to parliament for blessing. But it is not parliament to extend it, because this parliament needs to be dissolved even itself. What mandate will it be using?
Adigo's remarks come amid reports of renewed fighting in Unity and Upper Nile states. He criticized both warring parties for lacking the political will to end the fighting.
For how long are we going to kill ourselves? For how long are we not going to think about the people who are now suffering in the displaced camp? For how long will we not think about the people who are suffering in other countries as refugees in Sudan, in East Africa, in Ethiopia?
Adigo says there is no way elections can be held while South Sudan is burning. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
Delegations from South Sudan government and rebels loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar are scheduled to meet in Sudan's capital next week to continue with the search for peace. South Sudan's foreign minister says the meeting is organized by the government of China. A senior member of the SPLM-IN opposition praised China's role in finding a lasting solution to the conflict in South Sudan. VOA fellow Nabil Biajo has more.
SPLM-IN opposition Deputy Secretary for Foreign Affairs, Ambassador Ezekiel Lol Gatkwath, says the meeting will be chaired by the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, which has been mediating South Sudan's peace talks in Addis Ababa. He says the Chinese Foreign Minister, Wang Yi, invited the foreign ministers of Sudan, South Sudan, and Ethiopia to the one-day meeting in Khartoum. Lol says China's role in trying to help find peace in South Sudan is important.
They are the biggest investor in South Sudan and also in Sudan. And in Africa, China is everywhere. They are investing everywhere in Africa. So they have influence over Juba, and they can persuade Juba to think peace so that we can develop this beautiful country called South Sudan.
South Sudan's Foreign Minister Barnaba Marial Benjamin says his government is attending the Chinese-sponsored meeting. He says China wants the two warring parties to negotiate in good faith. Marial says his government is serious about finding a lasting solution to the conflict in the country.
His Excellency, the Foreign Minister of the People's Republic of China, His Excellency Wang Yi, had invited the IGAD foreign ministers, including the SPLM in opposition and also the Republic of South Sudan Minister of Foreign Affairs and our delegation of peace talks, including Kenya and others, so that he can make further consultation on the IGAD peace process, consultative in order to strengthen and push forward the peace process in Addis Ababa.
The on-again, off-again talks to resolve the conflict in South Sudan collapsed in the Ethiopian capital last year, and fighting between the two warring parties continues in parts of Upper Nile and Unity States. The Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, had threatened both sides with sanctions in the event they failed to reach a peace deal last year. Ambassador Lol says the Chinese are not taking over IGAD's mediation role.
Besides this peace consultative conference in January 12th, the IGAD heads of state and government are proposing a summit, a full summit, on the 17th and 18th of January here in Addis. And also we will be participating in this. And it is basically trying to report back to the IGAD countries.
There are conflicting reports of continued fighting in Unity State. South Sudan Army spokesman Colonel Philip Aguirre denies his forces are attacking rebel positions. He told South Sudan in Focus that the rebels have been attacking government positions in Unity and Upper Nile States. The SPLM in opposition deputy foreign minister says war is expensive to wage for both sides.
It is very important for China to play their influence over Juba so that they stop this aggression and stop thinking about war, because nobody is going to win this war. Juba will not win this war. And we know that we are also not for this war. The war was imposed on us. We need to end this war as soon as possible. We need to have a win-win situation, a win-win solution.
South Sudan in Focus could not get independent confirmation of the report about today's fighting in Unity. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, China makes donation to South Sudan's health sector. That story is coming up after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
who should be able to determine what you can wear?
I don't think anybody can determine what I should wear or not, because when I'm buying clothes, I know that this thing is going to fit me or not. Maybe my parents can do that, but I don't think anybody else can do it.
My parents, because they have responsibility to take care of me, and they also gave me a lot of cash, so they have the responsibility.
The determination of what I can wear myself, but then my wife helps me a lot in that area.
No one should be able to determine it for me. I should be able to determine what I want to wear and at what time.
Of course, now it's me who should determine what I should wear, because once I put on a certain kind of clothes, I look at myself as I'm smart, not somebody determined that you should put on this to look smart.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today, we are talking about donations to the Juba Teaching Hospital. China has pledged $33 million today to help the South Sudanese government modernize Juba Teaching Hospital. Officials from the two countries signed a memorandum of understanding confirming the deal at the South Sudan Health Ministry in Juba. Waki Simon Wudu was at the signing ceremony and sent us this report.
The $33 million will be used to expand the maternity ward and emergency unit at Juba Teaching Hospital, says South Sudan's Minister of Health, Dr. Ria Guy Koch. Guy was at the ceremony at the Ministry of Health where the Memorandum of Understanding was signed. Juba Teaching Hospital is the main regional medical referral center in South Sudan and one of very few hospitals in the entire country. Guy says the current maternity ward at Juba Teaching Hospital can accommodate only 27 persons. After the expansion, it will be able to admit 100 persons, he says. The emergency unit's capacity will also expand, Guy says. Guy says the funds from China will also be used to improve the infrastructure of Kir Mayardit Hospital in Rumbeke. That hospital was constructed with aid and funds from the Chinese government and inaugurated last year.
So I would like to seize this opportunity to thank our brothers and friends from the People's Republic of China for this generous support. And it's not a coincidence, of course, for China to undertake this huge developmental project, because our president, His Excellency Salva Kiir Mayardit, chose health to be his number one priority. And Chinese, in line with the vision of our leadership, have also decided to make investments on those lines.
Developing and designing the project will take around 14 months, Guy says. Rebuilding is expected to begin in early 2016, he says. Juba Teaching Hospital was built in the 1920s by British colonialists as a military barracks. It was later converted into a military hospital for British soldiers. Today, it is the main national hospital providing services to millions of people residing in the capital Juba, as well as from all 10 states of South Sudan. But its services are inadequate, as evidenced by the constant complaints from citizens about service delivery. Guy says the Chinese pledge of funding is the largest that South Sudan has ever received, especially for health care. He says the development project
is going to change the landscape of health sector. This investment by the Chinese government and people would go down in history as really the first ladder of our health system in this current future. And as put here, it will accommodate the changes for 50 years to come.
Addressing the Chinese embassy's economic and commercial counselor, Zhang Ying, at the signing ceremony, Guy said China's pledge to help South Sudan at a difficult time gives hope to South Sudanese.
Your Excellency, we want you to convey our thanks and gratitude to the government of People's Republic of China. We are grateful with your help. This difficult time, this is going to raise hope of our people that not everything is worse in South Sudan, but there's also some shining aspect of life in South Sudan.
Jiang says the funds to improve the hospital are aimed at boosting China's cooperation with the South Sudan. China has had a presence in South Sudan for several decades, including during the long civil war that eventually led to South Sudan's independence in 2011. Jiang says the fighting that broke out last year in South Sudan has led to massive destruction of infrastructure, including health facilities. He says this is a threat to the country's development. Jiang says the South Sudanese government must increase efforts to restore peace.
Peace and development are twins. If there's no peace, you can hardly start development. But if there's no development, peace could never sustain. So let's join our hands together, then shoulder by shoulder, to promote cooperation, to promote the improvement of the living standard of the people of this young nation. And we wish an earlier prosperity of South Sudan.
Jiang says the $33 million pledge is part of the Chinese government's investment in health, education and infrastructure in South Sudan. China is also South Sudan's main partner in the country's key revenue generator, the oil industry. Guy says that South Sudan still has a lot of work to do to improve health care service delivery to its people. South Sudan has one of the highest infant and maternal mortality rates in the world, and more needs to be done to train medical personnel and improve infrastructure, the health minister says. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Udu from Juba.
15 South Sudanese secondary school teachers will depart for the United States today to begin a four-month training course at Arizona State University. The fellowship program, sponsored by an American businessman, offers an opportunity for the teachers to enhance their skills and leadership, which are much needed in their home schools. Philip Thornaleu reports from Juba.
American businessman Edward Esley is the benefactor behind the South Sudan Education Fellows Program at Arizona State's Mary Lou Fulton Teachers College. The program is meant to prepare South Sudan's next generation of educational leaders, according to the Ministry of Education. The four-month-long training will focus on in-depth curriculum development and other aspects such as teacher leadership, equity, technology, and effective instructional methods. Humia Elijah Warren is one of the 15 teachers chosen to participate in the fellowship program. Warren, a teacher from Juba Girls Secondary School, says these types of opportunities are common for South Sudanese educators, but sustaining momentum is a problem. He believes this is something the government must carefully consider.
I feel it is very, very important because the American people and other people will not continue to take people outside because it is very costly to go and have such programs. But the few who are getting these opportunities, I think the ministry could look at ways of how certain resource centers could be put in here, and then the few can be used to have this information benefit the bigger part of the world.
Warren, who represented his fellow travelers at farewell party organized by Ministry of Education on Monday in Juba, says he hoped to return to South Sudan with more knowledge. Michael McCarthy, the deputy chief of mission at the United Nations Embassy in Juba, congratulates the fellows. McCarthy says American businessman Edward Essley knows the significance of nurturing more well-educated teachers to support South Sudanese children.
He could have done anything with his money. He could have, I don't know, built a hotel. He could have gone on another cruise. He could have done anything in the world. But you know what? He didn't do that. He chose to spend that money on you because he has faith in you.
South Sudan has one of the lowest rate of literacy on the continent, and teachers often complain of low salaries. John Gayol, the National Minister of Education, admits the country's education system faces numerous challenges. Guy says building more schools and training more teachers will take time. He says his ministry is planning to build a first-ever teachers training college in South Sudan during the past 6 months of 2015.
We're going to train the whole country. It is a very special group of people. Out of you will come people we are going to utilize as a nuclei for our teachers training institution. Young people, ambitious, highly qualified, but forward-looking.
Guy says he believes education for all children will help stem out the sectarianism and tribal-based violence that has emerged during the one-year-old conflict. But the 15 teachers traveling to the U.S. will be concentrating on improving their expertise. Regina Musima, a teacher from Tori Day Secondary School in Eastern Equatorial State, is anxious to master new teaching techniques.
I will learn more about technology, how to use technology in teaching, in education. Because we were taught in a university, methodology and this technology, like projecting the lessons, but we were not taken for practical. We were just taught theoretically. And now we are there at the school even teaching using Blackboard. We don't know how to use even this projector. So this is part of technology. So I'm expecting when I reach there, I will come with a new knowledge about how to use the technology in teaching.
Masima, who teaches biology and chemistry, is one of two women chosen for this fellowship. Masima says many girls in South Sudan don't reach secondary school due to cultural practices that restrict them to indoors activities. She says having more female teachers could change that trend. The teachers traveling today are from Central and Eastern Equatorial States. Ministry of Education official says this first phase of the fellowship is a pilot project and the program will expand to other states in the future. 85 teachers applied and the 15 successful candidates were chosen based on their academic merits. For VOA News, I am Philip Tonaleo in Juba.
And now we move to Gambia. The government there is reacting to a December 30th coup attempt has been swift and unprecedented, according to human rights groups that say dozens of civilians and security personnel have been detained. The story has taken an international dimension, as well as with arrests in Senegal and the United States. And Luke has more from Dakar.
Security remains tight in the Gambia, a week after gunmen tried to overthrow President Yahya Jammeh. Authorities are hunting for those suspected of involvement in the December 30th coup attempt. They monitor and search people at the borders and at checkpoints along the main road to the capital. Several of the alleged coup plotters are believed to have fled the country. Human rights groups, including Amnesty International, are warning countries not to extradite suspects to the Gambia.
So, there is a scandal. Can paint extradition in Gambia.
Amnesty Senegal country director Sadi Gassama says it would be a, quote, scandal to extradite someone to the Gambia. Under international law and the UN Convention Against Torture, he says, you cannot extradite someone to a country where there are grounds to believe he will be tortured or could be executed extrajudicially. Rights groups initially reported that Guinea-Bissau had detained several Gambians. Guinea-Bissau said Monday that is not true. Senegal says it is expelling Gambian dissident Cheikh Sidi Abayo, a joint French-Gambian national, though it's unclear on what grounds. Rights groups say they believe Senegal will send him to France. Two American citizens of Gambian descent are being charged in the United States for their alleged roles in the coup attempt. The complaint says they were among 10 to 12 people who entered the Gambia from the United States and Britain to try to overthrow Mr. Jammeh. It's against U.S. law to conspire to take up arms against a country with whom the U.S. is at peace. Gambian President Jammeh came to power in a coup in 1994. His government is criticized abroad for human rights abuses and what Amnesty calls, quote, iron-fisted repression of dissent. Mr. Jammeh condemned the attack on December 30th as a, quote, terrorist act, mounted by, quote, dissidents from abroad. Rights groups say there has been a wave of arrests inside the tiny West African country. An activist monitoring the situation from Dakar told VOA he knows of at least 22 relatives of suspected coup participants who had been detained for questioning, as well as several security officials. He said the relatives have included an elderly mother and children under the age of 18. He said some have been released. Ann Luck, VOA News, Dakar.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. An Israeli military court has sentenced a Hamas militant to 3 life prison terms in connection with the murder of 3 Israeli teenagers. The court also ordered Hassam Hassan Kassamsami to pay $63,000 in compensation to each of the 3 families at a hearing today near the West Bank city of Ramallah. Egyptian security officials say gunmen have killed 2 policemen who were guarding a Coptic Christian church south of Cairo. The attack happened today in Minya, a city on the Nile River, about 250 kilometers from the capital. And finally, Pakistani lawmakers have passed a constitutional amendment that would allow the military to set up courts to try terrorism cases for 2 years. The lower court house or the lower house of parliament overwhelmingly approved today's measure. It goes next to the upper house and is expected to become law later this week. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Ceasefire by Kebas featuring Young Bo.
We need some peace, y'all. Harmony is what you're dying for. Yep.
Zeta Duban, Junu Sudan, Bele Jamil wa Aziz, Lakisi Yasa Shilu Nasfa, Ukate Zaman, Nina Kulana Kanma, Shin Legidam, Shusha Bab Bimud, Iyal Bimud, Bejian, Metalga, Mofof Kaman, Kuli Yamahal Bika, Mama Bikore,
Yarabi,
we want peace.
Not solved. All I see is children dying. No orphans every day. I see the mothers crying. Lay a drama.
We have been listening to Kebas and Young Bo with the song Ceasefire. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening and join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Dying for equality, dying for humanity, prosperity and justice. Stop the bloodshed.